Dave, I had to take my car into the shop to get a new car horn this past week.
Car horn?
Have you ever had to replace a car
horn? I have never
had.
Don't you have to charge it or something? It has to have a gas or something? Is that what it is?
I don't know what it was, but I had to replace mine because mine just stopped working.
Wait a minute. Are you an angry driver, Brad? Is that what we're learning from this?
Well, listen, I don't know that I would call it angry. I use my...
Listen, as a man who has run his horn dry, I don't know why I would call it angry. I just use it excessively and all the time and very loud levels.
Yeah, there just happens to be a lot of Subaru drivers around me.
This is like a man going into an ear, nose, and throat doctor, and they're like, well, do you yell a lot? And you're like, no, I don't know why it's my God.
Yeah, no, I sometimes I believe in communicating with the other drivers. And if you're in front of me and the light has turned green and you're still on my or on your phone, I'm going to give you a little pleasant little honk, a little double beep to let you know that it's time to go forward, turn Facebook off and go forward in the vehicle. You've got to have a little bit of communication with these drivers.
I've driven in Philly before, and I have to say, Philly is not terrible in terms of drivers. I would describe Los Angeles as terrible in terms of drivers.
Yeah.
Actually, the worst that I've ever driven was two specific cities in Mexico, which are just, whew, you got to be super aggressive and heavy on the horn. Although I've heard India is the worst to drive in terms of conditions.
Oh, yeah.
But, okay, so Philadelphia, how would you describe Philadelphia as a driving environment?
Oh, challenging. You've really got to be on top of your game. You've got to be driving the other person's car as well. You know, you've got to be looking out
for
people.
Sure. You got to be avoiding the Subarus, as you said last week.
Yeah. And you've got to be expecting the unexpected. You've got to be expecting that guy to come through the stop sign without stopping. You know, you've got to really stay alert. This is no time to be on Facebook behind the wheel. Let's face it. But I went into my, I've got a good old fashioned car shop that I take my car in for repairs. It's a gas station that has the repair place
in the bay,
connected to it.
Yeah.
And I've been going to him for years. He's a great guy and has just been super, super good. And I went in, I said, Anthony, I got to get a new car horn. I said, my horn stopped working. And he goes, stopped working? I said, that's my story. My horn stopped working.
For no reason that can be discerned.
Yes. And I said, I can't communicate with the other drivers anymore. It's driving me nuts. He said, no problem. I'll do it. Now, I've got a Mazda. And the Mazda has a very polite beep, which drives me crazy. Because when I'm behind the wheel and I've got the window rolled down, I say, hey, you, move your freaking truck. And then I hit the horn. It goes, peep, peep. It's really hard. It's really hard.
You've blown this horn out. You're like, I want screaming, and you're giving me beeping.
Yeah. And it's giving me peeping. Peep, peep. And so I said, see if you can get something with a little bit of, you know, a little timber behind it. Give me an aggressive horn. Give me something that vents my spleen. And so I came back a couple hours later. He says, listen, I did the best I could. And I said, the best you could? He said, we had to go with a generic horn. He goes, I couldn't match the Mazda. I couldn't find anything else. We had to go with a generic horn. I said, what does it sound like? He says, well, hit the button. I hit the button. Dave, do you remember the Roadrunner?
Yes.
My car now goes, meep, meep. It's a little bit higher, a little bit more reedy.
And a twinge of comedy to it. That's great.
Yeah. If you remember the Magic School Bus at the end of the theme song, here on the Magic School Bus, meep, meep. That's what I've got now.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. So I want to, with a big spoonful of self-awareness, let me ask you, do you vent your rage on the road at life? Like, we've all have a modicum of anger in our hearts. Do you vent it in the road, Brad? Is that what happens here? I'm going to put you on the couch for a minute.
I don't know that I vent it, but I'll tell you this. I don't keep it bottled up when I got it. tell you what.
I don't let it sit idly by. I do let it out.
Right. You've got to communicate with those. Nine chances out of 10, that person's on their phone. You got to give them a little meep, meep and get them moving.
Oh my God. If we get to do the Schultz thing in November, the Schultz Museum, and you fly out to LA and then we drive up to Northern California together.
Yeah.
It's going to be fascinating switching driving seats. Cause you know, it's a good drive from Southern California to Northern California. I don't know. Yeah. Most Europeans might not realize how big California is. It's a day's drive to get up there. And we're going to have to switch drive. And it's going to go from, you know, the angry uncle to like a Zen Buddhist philosopher driving. Because I am the most Zen driver. My father-in-law, who's also an angry driver, gets so mad at me because people will cut me off and be like, I bet they're having a bad day.
Remember the one day? They're having a good conversation on Facebook.
Do you remember the Muppet janitor that was always kind of stoned? I don't remember what his name was.
Oh, God, it started with an R. Beauregard.
Beauregard. I kind of sound like Beauregard as I'm driving. I'm like, well, I think they needed the spot more than me. I don't need to drive that fast. I'm okay. I'll be late to the event. That's all right. And meanwhile, Brad's just laying on his meep meep horn, burning through the circuits.
That's right. And holding grudges. I remember passing you last a couple miles ago at the rest stop. We're staying behind you.
And on that note, I'm going to say hello, everybody, and welcome to Comic Lab, the show about making comics.
And making up meep meep living from comics. I'm Brad Geiger, editor of webcomics.com and the creator of Evil Inc.
And I'm his friend Beauregard, cartoonist of Drive and Sheldon and co-director of the comics documentary Stripped.
And this week's hour of comics advice is made possible by your support at patreon.com/comiclab. So Dave, let's talk comics.
Let's talk comics, my friend. And we've got a really good show for everybody today, packed with Patreon advice and in the second half, a whole bunch of really good questions. So we're excited to get into it. But I just want to set a reminder that you could be watching the show live right now with our live gab friends over at patreon.com/comiclab. The show streams weekly every Tuesday morning. You can join us. And it's also archived in case you missed this or that session or you want to go back and watch an old show. So join us over at patreon.com/comiclab.
And as you're watching us on the live stream, you could also be doing your own comic work if you had a Wacom One from our sponsors, Wacom at WACOM.com, makers of the powerful professional portable Wacom One.
Which both Brad and I have in our studios and use and love, and in addition to our additional Cintiqs, between the 1-2 punch of both of them has been fantastic. So we give a huge shout out and a thank you to our sponsors and friends over at Wacom. And Bradley, we got a big show to jump right into because you had promised in weeks past that you were going to give your surefire techniques to how to burn out your car horn very quickly, and then B, how to do great and improve your Patreon settings. So let's jump right in. What do you got for us this week, my friend?
So here's what we're going to do at the top of the show is, and this is something that as I'm seeing other people's Patreons or people ask me a question and I go check out what they're doing, I'm seeing the same mistakes over and over and over again. And they're real simple mistakes, but they're gonna cut you off at the knees in terms of trying to make your Patreon work the way it's supposed to. Okay. So I'm gonna identify 9 very common Patreon mistakes that you can fix immediately, and you should fix immediately.
Okay.
After that, we're gonna go into some strategies that do work. In other words, after talking about the mistakes, we're gonna talk about how to replace some of those behaviors with some stuff that actually works.
Okay.
And then at the very end, we're going to talk about unpublishing a Patreon tier. And that's how to fix a broken tier. If you see that you're making one of these mistakes and you might be saying, oh, but I don't want to change it because I've got Patreon backers there. Listen towards the second half of this conversation. We're going to talk about how to do exactly that. Okay.
I'm excited for this because this is you can always tell when it's a good Brad-driven segment because there are bullet points, there are sub-bullet points, things are organized. Right. He's like, all right, now in subparagraph 9, bullet point 2, we're going to talk about how to improve that. So yes, jump right in. Yeah. This is exciting. I'm going to be listening myself.
Well, you can probably guess what my first one is because it's something I've talked about passionately, but I see it so often that I feel I've got to make it number one, and that is to stop saying support me on Patreon. It's really, really a terrible pitch, and it's tone deaf. So here's what you have to understand. People are walking around right now worried about how they're going to support themselves, right? They don't know. They're worried about making the rent. Right. They're worried about making mortgage, food prices are going up because of shipping conundrums. There's all kinds of stuff that's weighing on everybody's mind. Mm-hmm. If your pitch is, hey, support me too, that's a bad pitch. Okay. So what does that mean? Does that mean that people aren't going to support or aren't going to back your Patreon because they're worried about their own finances? No. And all you've got to do is look towards the Great Depression in the 1930s, or even more recently when we all went on lockdown. Both of those were very similar in that money became very, very tight, mm-hmm. right? But in the Great Depression, movie theaters blossomed because it was cheap entertainment. And
it had air conditioning. Yeah.
Yeah. And people need that. People need cheap entertainment. Even if your rent is hanging over your head, you're going to spend a couple bucks on just stuff that makes you happy. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Look at what also bloomed and blossomed as we went into the pandemic: streaming services, right? Well, right. Everybody's kind of living on a little bit less, but streaming services didn't suffer a bit. In fact, they even grew. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't mean that you can't, it doesn't mean that you're not going to get a Patreon backer. It means you need to switch your pitch and stop saying support me on Patreon. And instead, I've always been a big fan of join us on Patreon.
Yeah. And I have to say, when you first pitched that to me, I don't know, 2, 3, 4 years ago, it was like a light switch going off, because support as a word triggers a lot of psychological conditions of like a burden, a child you have to care for, a spouse that you have to care for support, you know, that guy, all sorts of words in both legal and psychological ways make support have a lot of weight to it. That is not what you want to communicate. You're not asking for support. You're asking for them to join you, which that has all the echoes of a party or a group or belonging or social or well-being, right? Or community. Yeah. And so changing that one simple word. And honestly, when Brad said it, I was like, it was a light switch. I was like, oh God, I've been doing it wrong. I have been doing it wrong. It is not. Yeah. And also it takes the onus off of the direction of the support off of you and onto what does this give you as a reader, not you, the creator. I can't support this one enough. I think this is a great idea.
Yeah. And it's going to change not only the way you pitch your Patreon, it's going to change the way you think about your Patreon, which is important. Mm-hmm. And it leads right into point number two. And that is this: people want things for their money. They're just like you. You don't just walk around handing money to people, right? People want things for their money. And if you offer things of value, they're going to be happy to give you money to get them, right? Mm-hmm. So you need to have exclusive rewards at the upper tiers of your Patreon, right? You've got to have stuff that has value. Now, the good news is that digital rewards, and this is something that we've proven for years now, digital rewards have value. People have value in getting exclusive access to something that they can only see on their screen. They have value in ebooks and e-comics, in live streams, all of those things. All of those digital rewards have value. We're gonna talk about you never want to do a physical reward on Patreon, because by the time you get done shipping, you've given all the money back that you've earned.
Right.
Right. But you need to have exclusive digital rewards at your upper tier on your Patreon.
Yeah. And this is to Brad's point, the digital can be a whole spectrum of things that can be offered in terms of either access, early reads, sneak peeks, behind the scenes, Q&A's, the list goes on and on. Ebooks that are slimly packaged ebooks, you know, of like, here's the last 30 days, here's the last 3 months, that kind of thing. Something that you might not give to retail, that kind of idea. Again, you do not want to do a physical thing, because you're basically saying to your readers, okay, give me $5 and then I'll spend $4.99 giving you everything back that you've just given me in a physical good, which defeats the whole purpose. It's not worth it. So yeah, you do want to keep it in the digital sphere.
And as you're talking about it, remember, and you see a lot of people make this mistake on Patreon as well. When they're talking about Patreon, they'll say, if we get to this level, then I can get another computer.
Yes.
If we get to this level, then I can do a second comic per week.
And all you need to do is look at the construction of that sentence. If we get to this level, I get the thing, you know?
Right.
Yeah. That's all you need to do is look at that construction.
Exactly. And that goes under people want things for their money too.
Right.
You need to be talking about what's in it for them, not what's in it for you.
Right.
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 You need
to
say, if you become a backer, then you get these rewards. See, now that's a good statement.
And
that's
even,
a good if then statement.
Even keeping the original construction, if we get to blankety blank, then we get that. Even that is better than then I get, you know?
Right. You don't want to talk about what's in it for you.
Right.
That's not a good thing.
Remember, the thing that drew them to this Patreon, to the very idea of backing it, is your work, is the output, is what it brought them. And so you want to build on that attitude, not on what it's going to improve for you. Even if the thing that it will do improve for you will be an increased output, make the terms about that. Don't make it about like, I will get a computer and the computer will allow me to do all that. They don't want to hear that. Yeah. They want to hear you're going to get another cartoon a week or another blankety blank a week because we got to this level together.
Absolutely. And that's, again, it's going to change how you think about your Patreon. And then as a result, it's going to change how you talk about it. So let's go to number three. If you've got a $1 Patreon tier, you need to pause the podcast right now. Fast forward to when we're going to talk about unpublishing a Patreon tier. You need to drop your $1 Patreon tier. Patreon's own research shows us that if you tell everybody at the $1 tier that you're going to make it a $2 tier. Your fear is that you're going to lose all those backers.
Right.
Patreon's research shows us that if you could lose 69% of your current $1 backers, if the rest of them go up to the $2 level, you will make more money.
Right.
That's
right.
All you got to do is hear that. I'm sorry, the number is 59%, but it's still a huge number, right? You could lose more than half of them. And you've got more money. Okay. So number one, if you've got a $1 tier, you're making a huge mistake. You're making a big mistake and you've got to cut that out. You got to do it now. Even if you lose a bunch of backers, you're still better off. And that leads us to point number four, the $2 tier. You can't be giving away significant rewards at the $2 tier. Now, I realize I just got done talking about how we don't say support, but this is the one time you allow that concept to come in. Listen to this all the way through. You're already, if you're like most of us, putting an enormous amount of work out into the world for free, right? You've got your free webcomic, you're doing all kinds of things like that. Or if you're not in comics, you're doing a similar thing and you're giving away a lot of stuff for free. That's $2 tier is for the people that appreciate that comic they're getting for free and they just want to see it continue.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
That's the quote unquote support tier. Okay. And that's what they get for $2. The most I would allow to go out at the $2 level is like early access. I'll grant that, right? You can give early access at the $2 level. Beyond that, nothing important goes at the $2 level. That is literally for people. That's if you want to think of that as a tip jar, the support level, whatever you want to think about it as, that you're the reward is already delivered for that $2. And it's the stuff that you're already putting into the world.
Yeah. And I would broaden that slightly from Brad's definition and say, if there's low hanging fruit that can be offered in terms of access or sneak peeks or behind the scenes, nothing really massive. Now, Brad's already going to jump all over me for that. But I think I would distinguish. You can offer some things at the $2 level that are a sneak peek behind the curtain, but not substantive in the I've produced new things in terms of for the higher levels that you now have access to, or I've done extra work. It's stuff that is, how do I describe it? It's iterative of things that were already going to be produced. So sneak peeks, maybe early reads. If you wanted to put something down at the $2 level, I would suggest those kind of things, the iterative versions of work that's already been produced. Brad, what are your thoughts on that? Do you not like that idea?
I'm not crazy about it, mainly because think about the last time you bought something that was only $2. There's very few things in today's economy that's only $2.
Right.
Maybe
right.
a candy bar is a $1.50, right? It's that money, and remember,
given
this is
how much you paid for the horn, that's probably only two blasts of the horn, I think.
That's right. You don't get a lot of toots out of that.
No, you don't get a lot of Roadrunner toots for that. Yeah.
So I would caution you on that. But okay. Of course, you've got to decide what your own thoughts are. But here's the other reason I don't want to see a lot at that $2 level, because it's a very small jump from $2 to $5, and that's really your next logical stop.
Right.
And you want people to climb the ladder.
You do.
You want
absolutely.
Remember, $2, they're already getting everything you're putting into the world, and they get to help make that happen, right?
Right.
They're already getting a lot of rewards at the $2 level.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about it that way. And you want them to go take that next leap up to five. And right. if you've got more things like that, like the behind the scenes and live streams and stuff like that, I want that to be at the $5 level, because it's a very small nudge to once they're in at the $2 level, it's a very small nudge to get them up to $5. And now you're making a big impact on your monthly statement.
I very much agree. I'm not trying to pick a fight. What I was saying is maybe pick one of them for the $2 level. It's sort of an enticement of like, let's get you on board. You're going to get your credit card out for the first time just to get it in the system. So let's give you a little taste of what the goodness is, you know, like a nibble of the burger. But if you want the whole burger, that's at the $5 level. That's what I'm getting at.
I could see that. As long as you've got good rewards at that $5 level and you're not robbing Peter to pay Paul, I'd co-sign that.
And that there is a significant step up in all the goodies that you'll get at the $5 level. That's kind of what I was leaning towards. Yeah. So keep going, Brad. What's the next one?
So here's the next one. You've got too many tiers. You've got a $1 tier. You got a $2 tier. You got a $3 tier. You got a $5 tier. You got a $10 tier. Too many tiers, too many choices.
Yeah.
You don't want that many choices. All right. Because it's too much.
Yeah.
It's too much. Especially if a lot of those tiers are under the $10 level, that's a problem. That's a big problem.
Well, you suffer from the abundance of choice that retail sometimes has, which is you're standing at the aisle facing 17 different versions of mayonnaise. If you're especially if you're in an American supermarket and you're like, I don't know which mayonnaise do I like? There's 17 versions of this. Sometimes it's much easier to walk into a smaller market that has two mayonnaise and you're like, that one or that one, I'll pick this one, and you're out. And so Brad's idea of like lesser tiers works just on a basic retail level of too many choices can actually free someone up from the basic act of putting in their credit card and supporting you.
Yeah. If you're just starting off, here's what I recommend really strongly. Three tiers to start off.
Okay.
A $2 tier, that's your support tier.
Yep.
Okay. And by the way, if you're doing major mega numbers, you can do really good on your support tier. If you've got a huge audience, that $2 support tier can do great. That's not my audience. I don't know that that's Dave's audience.
Nope.
But if you're doing mega numbers, don't discount the support tier. But it's got to be there because it's where you start on the ladder.
And I'll pause you for 1 second, Brad. The $2 tier is also important for two other reasons. One is we've already talked about, it's a stepping stone to getting someone into the system. They've never done Patreon before. They're not quite sure about entering their credit card. They want to have an easy way to try the thing out, right? So that's good for one level, for the $2 level. I've also noticed people that fall on bad financial times. They've been backing at the $5 or $10 level, but they know they've just been laid off. They're going to be having like 3 months that are tricky. They don't necessarily want to abandon it though. So they go down to the $2 level. So it's good to have people that are in transitionary periods in their life also they have that option to drop down without dropping out. So I like it for both those reasons, Brad. Sorry.
No, that's a fantastic point. That's a great point. And I see that happening with my own Patreon as well.
Yeah. Because we all hit a patch at one point in our life. You know, exactly.
So I think you should have three tiers, a $2 support tier, a $5 tier with rewards that you consider to be medium level demand things, right? That would be live streams, behind the scenes, sketches, stuff like that. And then $10, that's where you've got high level demand items. That might be a spinoff comics that you do on a monthly basis or several times a month. That might be commissions that you're sharing, illustrations, so forth. This is going to be stuff that has a higher level of demand. And if you can separate out your rewards between medium level demand and high level demand, you've got the big beginnings of a really solid Patreon with a $2, $5, and $10 rewards. Any other rewards you add after that should be above the $10 level, $20, $50, et cetera. Then you get into things, Dave, and I think we both do it. I don't know that we suggest it so much, but then you get into things that like the reward comes every third
Month, 6 month, once a year.
Exactly.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, and those are harder to do. I don't recommend them. I do them. I do them.
I do too, and I don't
but
like
I don't
them.
Recommend them because they're a little bit tough to stay on top of, especially once it gets beyond like the three. I think every third pledge is as far as I'm willing to push it myself. Like things that are like once a year, I don't think it's feasible for somebody to think somebody's going to stay that long.
Right.
Especially at those upper levels. But yeah, that's one of those, I do as I say, not as I do things.
Exactly.
I don't recommend them. Do you?
Yeah. I, with all good intention, I have set some levels, I think on Sheldon, which is a Patreon that I don't manage as tightly as I do Drive. But Sheldon has a level where every year that you back, you can have I think it's either the $20 or $25 level. You can have an original art at the end of 1 year, which is great. Right. Sounds good. I forget. They forget. Sometimes I'll get an email like, I've been backing for 2 years, 3 years. Can I have three original arts? I'm like, of course you can. I missed the calendar dates. You missed the calendar dates. Let's do this. Right.
Yeah.
But and so it's fine because they're a super fan and they clearly are a fan of means. So it wasn't, you know, as important as someone who's penny pinching. But on some level, I still feel bad that I missed it. They missed it. You know, we both skipped that date. So I don't necessarily recommend that as a Patreon reward, although it's been good for the super fans. So, you know, take that with a grain of salt.
Right. This next one I want to talk about is a heartbreaker to me because it happens so much and it's such an easy mistake to make. And that is there's too much chatter in your reward tiers.
Oh,
right.
What
so
do you mean?
Well, you write that description for each reward tier to say, here's what you get at this tier. And the first thing people do is they go, as someone who's backing this webcomic, you're awesome and you're the best. And I want to tell you how much I love you. Here's the rewards you get.
Oh.
Well, here's the problem. When Patreon is presenting those reward tiers, they're cutting it off after the second or third line.
Yep.
So basically, I'm looking at one right now. Here's what I see. As someone who's backing this webcomic, you are awesome. That's all I got. Now, I pointed it out to the person. The person said, well, yeah, but they just click show more and they see the rest. And I said, I know that. I know that. Your reader doesn't know that. And even if they do, they don't care to click it. They're already gone. They got things to do.
Well, and basic user interface design will tell you that they're a significant percentage will never click that. You know, they'll just they'll read, they'll glance, they'll move on. And so to Brad's point, and Brad, and forgive me if I'm stepping on your toes by saying this next bit, but Brad pointed out to me many years ago that I had my system set up wrong such that when you looked at my $2 versus my $5 versus my $10, I didn't have the added bonus at the top and bolded, you know? And so I would, you'd have to read down, you'd have to click down to be like, okay, you got all the other stuff from the other level and these three things. Well, I should have led with those three things because those are the new, those are the additive, those are the special. And I'm really thankful to Brad for that tip.
Yeah. And you led me right into that.
Great,
exactly right. And this, when you're writing your reward tiers, this is a time for bullet lists and short statements and priorities. Those three things. Bullet lists, short statements, and priorities. So the most important thing is going to go at the top, and then the less important, and then the less important. The very last thing, the very last bullet list is, and everything from the previous tier.
Right.
That's the last thing, not the first. It's the last thing that you put there. Mm-hmm. And you go short, 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 bullets, bullets, bullets. Why? Because people want things for their money. They want to know what's in it for them. And this is where you're telling them. This is where you go down to that McDonald's menu board, right? They don't say, hey, you're a hungry person and you look like you need a Whopper. And here's what you're going to get on your Whopper. No, it says Whopper $5.95 or whatever it is for a Whopper, right?
Yeah, you're right. It is akin to a menu. You're right. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
You get down to business. Tell them what's in it for them.
It's also, Brad, it's also akin to those lists that you or I would make in a decision making where we bullet point out all the positives, bullet point out all the negatives. Well, in this case, you're not giving them any of the negatives for obvious reasons. You're just giving them a nice, big, happy list of positive bullet pointed items. So, I think this is a great point, Brad.
Now, here's, I'm going to take a little pause just for a moment because I can hear somebody saying, wait, that's not as important as, you know, a $2 and a $1 level. And it is. And I'm going to tell you why. Think of the amount of time and effort that it took to get a prospective backer to click that link that brought them to your Patreon in the first place, right? We talk about repeated social media messaging. Yeah. We talk about you've got to hear something 7 times before you take action. You finally took that reader from a passive reader to an active reader. It took a monumental amount of work just to get them this far.
Right.
And if you blew it on your Patreon tiers and didn't tell them what's in it for them, you lost them.
Yeah.
And you might have lost them for good.
Yeah.
Well, God only knows when they're going to decide to come back. You're going to have to do all of that messaging again. It takes a Herculean amount of work to get somebody to come over and check out your Patreon. You need to be ready for them when they do. Okay.
Yeah.
So here comes the next one, inconsistent delivery, right? And I see this all the time. When they're talking about their rewards, they'll say, and here's what you get, an extra comic whenever I can get around to doing one. I've actually read that sentence on a Patreon page, whenever I can get around to doing one, right? Or they'll say, whenever it's available, a commission. Well, again, people want things for their money. You can't give them rewards that are whenever you feel like it rewards. You want a monthly pledge, you've got to give a monthly reward. In fact, my personal experience is the more I post, the more pledges I get. It's a direct relationship. The more volume I've got there, the more I get pledges.
And let's transpose this to another human situation, and you'll see where the problem is here, is that someone is coming in to their significant other and saying, I love you. I love you, right?
Yes.
And then the other significant other says, I'll get around to saying something to you back at a certain point. Don't have time right now, right? Someone is expressing a concrete step of affection. And the other person is saying an inconcrete, like, you know, a immaterial, like, yeah, I'll get around to it. It's wispy. It's hopeful. It's noncommittal. It's not what you want to do in this situation.
Yeah, it's like, I love you, and you respond with, your call is very important to us.
That's better. That is better. That's better. Yep. Yeah.
So you've got to, if you want monthly pledges, you've got to be prepared to give monthly rewards. I kind of tip my hand on this one. So we'll just gloss over it. Physical rewards. Physical rewards are a nightmare on Patreon. Physical rewards are great for Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. That's what Kickstarter is for.
Yep.
Patreon is for digital rewards. I know Patreon's going to constantly tell you about merch for membership.
Oh, God, ignore that.
They're banging that drum on merch for membership. Listen, if you get tempted, just promise me this. Do the math first. Do the math.
Yes. Take 5 minutes. Figure out what that coffee mug brings you versus what it's costing that reader to buy.
Yes.
It is not worth it. It is not worth it. Merch
and
for
it's
members
bite
works,
into your profits.
Merch for members works only if you look at it in light of they need to show their VC money that they're trying to do other things. You know, like it's the only way that system makes sense because the economics just don't work out for anybody involved. They don't work out for the supporters. They don't work out for the artist. It maybe kind of works out for Patreon a little bit. Even when I looked at the numbers for that, I'm like, God, Patreon's not even only in
How
volume do they really
out?
Make anything substantive. And so and I don't think it's working for them because they are banging that drum constantly to the point where I'm like, no one's signing up for this. So everyone's seeing right through the math on this. So to Brad's point, not a big no on merch for members. It does not work. If you're going to do it, my God, produce it yourself. But even there, Brad and I would say that's for Kickstarter. That's not for Patreon.
Yeah. No, I agree with you 100%. The last thing I'm going to bring up is just a real quick mention about social media outreach.
Okay.
And again, most creators stink at social media, right? Because we put all of our value on originality. And the fact of the matter is, social media does not reward originality. It rewards consistency, frequency, things like that, quantity over quality.
Right.
And we can't, that doesn't jive well with folks like us. But that's the game we've got to play. You've got, every time I make a Patreon post, I make a social media post saying, hey, I just made a Patreon post. Every time, it's got to be consistent. It's got to be frequent. You've got to always be talking about it. And it feels like you're being repetitive. But remember, the algorithm is ensuring that you're not being repetitive. The algorithm is ensuring that each one of those messages you're sending only gets to a small percentage of the people following you. It's hard to be repetitive. And again, when you think that somebody has to hear something on average 7 times before they act, you need to be repetitive.
Yeah. To get them to hear those 7 times, you need to say it 50. And I'm not joking about that. The algorithm kind of works out about that number. So you need to say it to the point where you're like, I'm sick of myself, because the other person has not even heard it 2, 3, 4 times yet, you know?
Yes. And if you're worried about being repetitious, go back to those 4 C's of social media and balance it out, right? Yeah. So what we're talking about here is the 3rd C, commercial. That means you need to bump up your creation, your curation, and your kindness. That can be just commenting on other people's posts too. Falls right under kindness.
Right.
So if you're worried about being repetitious because you've got too much commercial, the way you fix that is very, very simple. It's just a case of bumping up those other 4 C's.
This is great. So, Brad, that concludes the pro tips for Patreon, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So I want to tell you something. This is unplanned, but as I was listening to you, something that hit me like a lightning bolt was I realized how many of these points actually are very related to Dale Carnegie's idea of how to win friends and influence people.
Wow. So, okay.
And it's from 1936. I'm not going to bore anybody with it. It's of passing interest because mainly at the bullet point level, it's interesting just to see what Dale Carnegie identified in 1936. And believe me, that book has sold so damn many copies that there's value to it, if no other reason than clearly the shared zeitgeist finds value in it. So anyway, I want to talk about what Dale Carnegie said because it relates to Brad. So these are 6 ways to make people like you, right? That Dale Carnegie identified in 1936. Now, just listen to these in terms of what Brad was just saying about Patreon, and you'll see the connection. I'm going to read them backwards. Number 6, make the other person feel important and do it sincerely. Well, that 100% relates to Brad's point about don't make it about you, make it about them, right?
Yes.
This is not about support me on Patreon. It's join us on Patreon. You're going to love it. Think about all the things you're going to get. You are going to have a good time, right? That's exactly what Dale Carnegie says. Make the other person feel important. So, and then number 5, we're working backwards. Talk in terms of the other person's interests, not your interests, their interests.
Right.
Brad, these are exactly what you were just getting through. Number 4 is be a good listener. Encourage others to talk about themselves. Well, that's one thing Brad didn't talk about. But in terms of forums, one of the great things that Patreon has that you can do in a way that's much better, more selective, more self-selective than the generalized internet, is that your forums can become a warm, welcoming, fun place that you interact with a lot, because these are your super fans who have self-selected into a community of like-minded people. And so that's an easy place to be a good listener and to jump into forums where you might not in the public. Other ones are, you know, smile. God, Brad, we talk about that all the time in terms of Phil Folio's point that, you know, you need to be able to fart butterflies in terms of you're having a bad day. Remember that you are ultimately an entertainer as an artist.
Right.
Your job is to not say, and my cat died, and I'm having trouble with my electrical bill, and my car horn won't blow anymore because I blow it too much. Remember that we always talk about, even if you're going to complain, if you have to complain, make it an entertaining complaint, because then as an artist, you have added value to it rather than bringing people down. So anyway, I won't go through the whole thing, but the idea was just interesting to me that a lot of these points about Patreon trace back even to the salesman techniques of Dale Carnegie in the 30s of like how to win friends and influence people. It's interesting how much of that is eternal.
I'll tell you this, Dave Kelly, you've won friends and influenced this person right now.
Hey, if you're listening while you work, take a minute to stand and stretch.
And while you're doing that, we're going to tell you why you should join us on Patreon.
When you do, you're going to get hours and hours of podcasts that we've recorded just for backers.
And exclusive Patreon posts that go even deeper on Comic Lab topics.
And access to our exclusive Discord server, which is a thriving community of professional cartoonists.
So you can support the show you love and get tons of actionable resources for your own cartooning.
And listen, if you can't swing a pledge this month, we get it. No worries.
Yeah, yeah, listen, you can still support the show by rating us wherever you get your podcasts.
Just leave a 5-star review and a few kind words.
That, along with mentions on social media, is incredibly helpful.
Now, everybody, let's talk comics. Well, Brad, a quick update for longtime listeners of the show. I just want to give a shout out and a huge congratulations to Kate Beaton, who has been toiling away during the pandemic on two projects that came to fruition virtually within days of one another. Pinecone and Pony, her show on Apple TV Plus, is going to be coming out in April, which is fantastic. I had no idea that was happening. That's very exciting. Yeah. And then her book, Ducks, a long-form graphic novel, which she's been working on for many a moon, is also coming out. And I just think it's interesting. We've talked in the past, Brad, about how to build a career in webcomics.
Yeah.
And Kate's taken a very different path. And I'm just happy for her that it's worked out. I think it's exciting. It's exciting to see the show. The artwork captures her style so well in animation, which doesn't always happen. It's not always guaranteed.
Yeah.
And then Ducks looks gorgeous in a totally different way. So I just want to say congratulations to her. It's very exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't wait to see both of those happen. So as we're coming into the second half of the show, I just wanted to take a couple seconds and wrap up the topics. First, I want to talk about just focusing. We've talked about a lot of stuff that doesn't work. We'll talk about some things that do work on Patreon. And it's a lot of just inverse of the stuff we've been talking about.
Okay.
First, your message should be join us on Patreon. Okay. Not support me. Number two, talk about what's in it for the backers, not what's in it for you. Number three, focus on exclusive rewards that you can deliver consistently. Number four, if you have a $1 tier, make it a $2 tier today. And we'll talk about unpublishing next. Number five, be smart about your reward tiers. Start with $2, $5, and $10. That's one level for each: support, medium demand, and high demand. Okay. And mm-hmm. then you can go from there if you're feeling it. Okay. Next one, post frequently for your backers. I'm telling you, the more you post, number one, people want to get good value for their money. If you are posting often, that's how they perceive that value. And earlier in the year, I talked about 15 Patreon posts that require no or little extra work. Go back to that episode. It might have been a pro tips, but go back and read that. There's 15 different ways that you could be making posts right now that have very little extra work attached to them. Stuff that's just a part of what you're already doing mm-hmm. To produce the comic. Okay. Mm-hmm. In other words, you can post more, and it doesn't mean a big time sink. Next, when you post exclusives for backers, you post social media updates about it. You always go out and say, I posted another thing for my backers. Right now, at last count, a fully 75% of the stuff that I do is Patreon exclusives. 25% of my output is available to the public. 75% is Patreon exclusives. That mm-hmm. requires an awful lot of chatter on social media to talk about. Okay. And as you're doing that, make sure you incorporate the four C's so that you can work that into a frequent, consistent messaging strategy. And the last one that I'm so surprised I've got to point this out to cartoonists, but I do. Every time I do a consultation, the web is a visual medium. You need to have good visuals.
Yeah.
You have to be yeah. smart about the visuals that you're posting. They've got to be crisp. They've got to be good. They've got to be meaningful. They've got to be compelling. You've got to use good visuals in your social media posts. It matters and yeah. it's going to give you a big return on your Patreon at the end of the day.
Yeah. And part and parcel of that is, you know, you've been working in your cartooning for a consistency of style, consistency of look and of coloring. Also in your branding, as you create these images for yeah. Patreon and in general for your website, but for Patreon as well, is that you want a consistency of look. You want a family of fonts that you turn to for your advertorials, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Advertorials are not advertising. They're not editorials. They're sort of a mix of like, this is how I do my coloring or the right. You want a consistent branding of fonts and colors that you go to whenever you do an Evil Ink advertorial or a Drive advertorial for your Patreon folks. So that yeah. there's a consistent feeling of look of quality that looks prepared and crisp and wonderful when you share it with folks.
Absolutely. So here's the last topic that we're going to cover for this Fixing Your Patreon edition. And it's unpublishing a reward tier. So let's say you've got a reward tier that isn't performing the way you think it should be, or you've got a $1 tier and you've allowed me to talk you into making that a $2 tier. You don't have to delete the tier. If you delete the tier, you lose all of the Patreon backers that you've got at that tier. And remember, right, it took you a long time to get them. You want to keep them.
Yep.
In fact, it's probably the main thing that's kept you from making a change is that you don't want to lose those Patreon backers, and you're not aware of the fact that you can unpublish a tier. So here's what happens when you do that. When you unpublish a tier, you keep those Patreon backers. It just disappears from the outside world. Anybody coming into your Patreon page who's not a backer doesn't even see that tier. It's not a choice for them, so they can't join at that tier. And so over time, it's just kind of attritioned out as people make other choices who are at that tier. So as you're going to unpublish that tier, you're going to give a heads up to those people who are at that tier and say, hey, I'm not going to be delivering rewards at this tier any longer. Here's the other tiers that I've got, and here's where you can go for those things. This tier is going to get shut down. You give them a month to make their decision. In other words, you want them to have plenty of time to make a decision before they get charged in the next cycle. You don't want it to be of all of a sudden thing. Right, I caught you. Now you're trapped for another month. You want to make sure you give them chance to make their choice. Nine chances out of 10, I've never gotten a big pushback on this. It's always been, oh yeah, I see why you're doing that. It's not a problem. Remember, these are the people that really like what you're doing. They want you to succeed.
And they want you to have a repeatability to it. They get it. They get it on some level. So yes.
Yeah. So this pushback that you're imagining in most cases is not going to happen. Right. It just isn't going to happen. So here's how you do. And I'm just going to give you a straight, you can look it up on Patreon support, but it's a very simple process. Click the page button from the creator menu, select edit page from the list, click into the tiers link from the page editor menu, click the edit tier button, scroll to the bottom of the tier editor, and click on the unpublish button. Click unpublish to confirm, and you've made that entire tier disappear from the outside world. It's a very simple process. It's built right in. And you can look it up on Patreon support pages or any number of other places. This is what you do if you've got a Patreon tier that isn't performing. You just unpublish it.
Yeah, I think and communication, as Brad said, is key to this. I remember when I moved from a post-based patronage where every time I posted, you paid a certain amount to a monthly subscription. It's just a matter of giving people a lot of heads up. You know you're going to unpublish in, I don't know, let's pick a month, June, right? So you start in late April, early May. You give them a lot of heads up, a couple of frequent reminders, always with a positive attitude of like, this new system is going to be better for everyone. And here's why. Here's what you're going to get. I recommend this level, but it's also good if you want to go down to this level. The main thing is to keep you happy. You know, bing about it. A lot of frequency of communication, clarity of communication, positivity and why this is happening, and offering to help anyone that might be a little stumped. And you'll transition these people over, no problem at all. It'll be easy peasy.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, Dave, without realizing it, you gave me my 10th Patreon fix. If you're doing post-based instead of monthly-based, you need to change. You need to change that right now. Post-based is a horrible system because what happens is everybody sets a limit to their Patreon pledge. Yeah. So what happens is you get 100% of the money on the first post. You get 80% of money on the second post. You get maybe 65% on the third post, and it keeps going down. I used to work on a project that had a buy the post Patreon, right, and different times, if we posted more than four things in a month and we were able to, we held that fifth post for the next month because we were going to get so little money for that fifth post. It just didn't make sense to post it. We had it done. We just posted it in the next month. So post-based Patreon is a horrible idea.
So I don't disagree with you. I don't disagree. I did it for myself with Drive because the Patreon people themselves, like the VP, pulled me aside and said, listen, now that we have governors on Patreon, you're going to notice more and more people are putting governors on. And I was like, that makes sense. I have seen that started to happen, right? As Brad said, people put a governor on. Like the first one will get $5, the second one gets $2, the third one gets $1, you know, whatever the governor is. And I saw that happening on a small basis. And he said, get ahead of it and go to a monthly based system. So I did. And that's not to say that more of my readers would not have in time put governors or dropped out completely, which might have happened, right?
Yeah.
But I this is a totally mirror marketing. I dropped $1,000 a month on the Patreon, that Patreon that I've never recovered. I'm one of the few people that like that pay by the post system was actually working really well for Drive. And I might have screwed the pooch on that in terms of like switching over to a monthly one. It works fine. I'm very happy with the level of income that Drive's Patreon makes. Very, very happy. But the fact remains, it dropped $1,000 a month on that Patreon that I've never recovered by going to. So I don't know where I'm going with that advice other than just to share a moment that with all the best intentions and with a super helping hand from Patreon, because I was one of the first people to do it.
Yeah.
They really handheld me through the process. I never really recovered from that in terms of that $1,000 that I dropped off on.
Oh, darned.
But they had just started to really institute the governor system. So they think, and I tend to agree with them, that it would have happened anyway. People would have started to governor more and more of their posts or their payment system. So I don't regret it. I don't think it was an unwise thing to do because it let me change the way I hire and pay for Tales of the Drive, like Brad Geiger has an upcoming one. So I don't regret it, but it was an interesting counterpoint in that programming. That for me, I lost $1,000.
All right, we'll keep that off. We'll go back to 9 again and keep that off of the list.
But yeah, you know what though? I've got 10 tips. I've got 10 tips to go off today to help me up that Patreon again. So that's great.
Well, listen, Dave, as we're wrapping up the show, I think we've got time for one more question. And this is a great one. Listen to this. Comes in from Jay Lark and it says, hey, Comics Uncles. I'm delighted that after watching me create comics over the years, my second grade daughter has been expressing an interest in creating her own comics. She's been doodling her own characters and adding the word balloons and everything. Naturally, at this young age, there's still plenty of time for her to develop this interest further or to set it aside and pursue something else, either of which I am totally supportive of. I'm just wondering if you have any advice for encouraging her interest in creating comics for however long the inclination lasts. Thanks for indulging a proud parent moment. And so, Dave, we both obviously have kids. Did you encourage your kids to do comics? And if so, how did you do that?
No more so than I encourage them to read or encourage them to try sports or encourage them to do this or that. In the sense that you know when your kid is really sparking on a project or on a topic or on an event, you know, you can tell. So I, like Brad, have had moments where my kids loved cartooning and they loved the act of cartooning. They loved telling their little jokes and telling their little stories And I've had moments where they might have fallen out of love with American comics, but then they fell in love with Japanese comics and they got into manga, you know, and all that sort of stuff. And so all you can do as a parent, and I think is in general, in terms of anyone who's falling in love with comics and want to try it out, is provide them with the resources when they come to you and say, well, look, here's some fun papers and pencils and colors you can use. Let's go to the library and get a couple of books on how to do some sequential art. And you just leave them around. You don't have to do any huge handholding. Kids will flip through and they'll try things out. Second grade, third grade level, they're reading enough where they can do one of those. You know, the books that Brad, that Hart used to do, what were those called?
Chris Hart. He did a metric ton of how to draw comics books.
And Randy Glassbergen, I think, had one or two. There's a number. Any good public library, you can just go through and ask the reference librarian. They'll have good reference books they can point you to for kids and making comics. Anyway, what I would tend to do is leave those around. Right. How to make comics the Marvel way or how to draw manga or, you know, how to do a comic strip or books from Hart or Glassbergen and things like that. Along with pencils and paper. And then, you know, obviously, whenever asked, I will take them through like how to do sequentiality or maybe how to do a word balloon. But the thing is, if they've been reading Dog Man or Raina Telgemeier or Bone or anything, they know in an oddly intuitive way how a word balloon is supposed to work, you know?
Yeah.
So I just try to be there for. How about you, Brad? Do you make your love as a parent contingent on them being a cartoonist?
No,
I should have led with that. That's what I do. I make it absolutely contingent on them being a cartoonist.
I was really careful with my kids not to overplay my hand a little bit because I never wanted them to think that I wouldn't love them as much if they didn't do good comics, right? Or that it was somehow related. If they wanted to draw, I got right up there and drew with them. But I never pushed it. I never suggested it so much. But I do have one word of advice, and that is, as a parent, I think you've got two jobs when it comes to looking at your kids' stuff. And that is very simple. Your job is to A, read the comics, and B, be delighted.
Yes.
That's your only job.
Yeah, you're right. Yes.
You need to read them and you need to love them. And if it's a joke, you got to laugh, even if it isn't really funny. If it's something scary, you've got to jump.
Yes.
You've got to be delighted in what they're doing. Cause that's really what that's what we're all looking for.
Right.
Except
right.
Like Dave and I, we're looking, we're putting our stuff out on social media, trying to get that response from maybe a couple hundred thousand people. Their only chance at getting that feedback is you.
Yes.
So you've got to be delighted in what you see. This is no time to say, well, listen, you know, you crossed your tails on your word balloon. That's kind of a no-no. I saw a couple of crossbar eyes in there. We got to work on that.
Your character's eye direction, you're really going to want to make them be having at an eye contact level. This guy looks like he's staring off into space. That's not working. Can you imagine critiquing a second grader like that?
Well, I could see where it would feel kind of natural because you're thinking, well, this is time to nip these problems in the bud.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But no, your job as a parent is to read and be delighted. And if you can do those two things, you're going to be doing that kid the biggest favor in the world.
Well, let me just say, from an autobiographical level, I came from my wife and I always laugh because she is a TV writer. I'm a cartoonist. And we always jokingly say, won't it be funny if we raise accountants, you know, like if they go the exact opposite of what mom and dad were. Because growing up in our family, for myself, there was, and my wife, same as for her, there were no artists in our family. So we had no one to sort of guidepost us on this is what you do, then this is what you do, and this is how you practice. Well, I basically made a lot of trips to the library and figured stuff out on my own, which is a perfectly lovely way to get better at anything, is to sort of self-teach and figure out what the guideposts are. But what I'm getting at is I really want to focus on that Brad point that you have got to be their biggest praise point because we kind of forget as adults that we have an audience that could be as wide as we need to push it. Like if you, Jay, created a comic and brought it to work, you could walk it around. Or if you shared it on your social media on Facebook or put it on Twitter, Instagram, you would have a certain amount of feedback for that. And you'd be like, wow, I'm feeling a little chuffed. I'm feeling pretty good about myself.
Yeah.
That second grader, their options are people at home or people at school. And the people at school, other kids sometimes don't know how to praise. Or if they do, it's weird. Or if they, you know, even if it is praise, it comes across wrong. Like second graders, I mean, bless their hearts, they're not the best at being like, I love you and I love what you've created. You know what I mean? They'll be like, your dog looks funny. Why does this person have blue hair? You're like, all right, thanks, Billy. I appreciate that.
We're done here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So Brad's point really hits home for me because... out of my family, I was the youngest of seven, and my parents were both wonderful, and all my brothers and sisters were wonderful. But my second oldest sister, Amy, for whatever reason, I am so grateful to her because she went out of her way to be kind, to point out fun details that made her laugh. By the way, they weren't funny. They weren't fun details, you know?
Yeah.
She really played up the fact that this joke worked well, it didn't, or that this character design was great, it wasn't, you know? But in third, fourth, fifth grade, I needed that. And that continuing source of support to know that one person had my back was really helpful. And for whatever reason, I don't know why, my sister Amy went out of her way to be so kind about my comics. And to this day, I still appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah. I had the same thing. I had a great aunt and great uncle that I think I've told you in the past that I would go to visit for the summers every now and again. they had no kids of their own. So they kind of would have me for a couple of weeks and get it out of their system and realize they made a good choice and go back to their life.
But pet their dog and then go back to reading the New Yorker. Yeah, exactly.
And so all it took, it really all at that point is having somebody take me seriously and say, oh, you're into comics?
Yeah.
Well, you know, here's the Sunday Funnies or here's the comics in today's Detroit News. Let's talk about which one you like and why. Right. And just have somebody that takes a genuine interest in what your thoughts are was such a pivotal point in my life that it really did kind of help direct me towards where I was going. And that's something you can do, too, is just take this person seriously for what their thoughts are on comics and not take it as an opportunity for you to be the teacher, but for you to be the audience. Or what's inside of their head and to really take them seriously. I guess I can't stress that enough that I really realized in that moment that I was being taken seriously.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, this is, you know, it's not just a pat on the head. Well, that would be nice. You know, comics are funny. But being taken seriously was really, really important for me. And I think that's what you can do too.
I think to summarize this, Jay, the three things we can recommend you do are lay out some basic resources. Doesn't need anything fancy. Some number two pencils.
Yeah.
I can't emphasize enough how just blank white paper makes a big deal. You think like, oh, well, there's paper in the house. But unless a second grader knows that there's paper around, like I remember Lynn Johnson from when we were interviewing her for Stripped, she's the creator of For Better For Worse. She talked about how it was really special to her when Christmas came around because she would get these Christmas cards that would fold and fold again. So when you unfolded them, you had four pieces of paper that were kind of drawn in sequential squares, right? And she could make comics out of them. Well, just having that as a resource around the house of like just having paper and pencils, the basic, basic stuff, right? That's number one. Number two is get some self-directed resources from the library. I think a couple of books from Hart or Glassbergen or How to Draw Marvel Comics Way, or How to Draw Comics the Marvel Way, or some manga directed books. Great stuff right there. And then the third one, and probably the most important, as Brad would say, is be the best cheerleader you can be for that second grader, third grader, fourth grader, that their work is wonderful. And I think you'll be right as rain.
Absolutely. And speaking of being a cheerleader, I want to take this moment, Dave, to tell you how wonderful you've been on another episode of Comic Lab, the show about making comics and making a living from comics.
Your hosts have been my friend, Brad Geiger, anger driver and the editor of webcomics.com and the creator of Evil Inc. at evil-comic.com.
And my good friend, Dave Kellett, the co-director of the comics documentary Stripped and the cartoonist of Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com and Drive at drivecomic.com.
I just realized we got to get you that horn from the 1930s that would go, Awooga! You know that one? That
I've
like
always
the...
wanted an Awooga horn. I don't even know what they're called. I just call them an Awooga horn.
I don't even know what that is, but it's such a specific horn. It's kind of like the Wilhelm scream, is that it's just so specific from sound design. Anyway, the Comic Lab theme song is used with permission from Andy Creighton at theworldrecord.net, and this episode was edited by the ever-wonderful Matt Woodard of Woodsong Productions over at www.woodsong.media.
If you love Comic Lab, you can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts, and you may hear your review featured on a future episode like this one. This one came in a 5-star review from Porter Mason, who says, "This show almost single-handedly got me back to drawing again after a 10-year break."
Whoa!
Their love for the work is palpable, and their generosity of spirit shows just how they share their knowledge with those starting out. On top of that, Brad and Dave's easy rapport with one another makes the whole thing a fun listen. I literally listen to this while I draw. As a friend, you need to listen to this. And in parentheses, be ready for vaudeville joke levels at all time. It's a feature, not a bug.
That's amazing. That's amazing because I literally 10 seconds ago went, "Awooga!" And Comic Lab is made possible by your support on patreon.com/comiclab. So we hope you join us over there, and I'll say it twice like Brad's horn, patreon.com/hinker. Hanker, hanker. Hanker, hanker. Mazda coming through. Hanker, hanker.
And now your moment of consideration from Susan McTaggart.
Oh, friend, fellow, Susan McTaggart here, author of my new book, A Heart Smart Heart is Just the Start, from Penguin Publishing, coming out in April. Friends, listen, big tip and advice for you today. Remember, friends, remember, everyone around you is offering their blessings, friends, but that's only because you've been sneezing nonstop. We'll see you next week, friends. We'll see you next week here on Comic Lab.